Big time count. What B movie will be the ultimate champion? You might think they're crazy, might think they're diseases. But they watch all the shot to find the best of the beast. It's Stan, Jim, Jack, and Nick who watch till it's finished. But their love for these movies can be diminished. And maybe the film's plot has no rhyme or reason. But that's part of the charm, Owen Brad's of the season. The low budget film that it is most true. They find in the flick that's most boogaloo. Kung Fu, Electric Boogaloo. Boo boo, Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu, Electric Boogaloo. Boo boo, Electric Boogaloo.
Yark Mala, Yark Mala! Welcome back, my friends, to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. This is season 10, Do You Believe in Magic? And I still do. I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and I'm so happy that you're tuning in to join us. As usual, I am joined by my good friends, and I've got James Cotta in the house.
Abracadabra, I am ready for this.
You are ready.
Ready to cast a deadly spell.
Cast your deadly spell. Okay, and now we got Nick Boxer.
Greetings and salutations. Stan, did you pick this film?
I did pick this film.
I have to thank you. I would have never found this film. You know, usually I'm aware of cheesy B-movies on some level. This one was completely off the radar, and hell, I had a heck of a time. Thank you.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I'm glad that you enjoyed it. All right, and we got Jack Hall. Jack.
Oh, sup. I gotta say, I won't do it now, but because we record two of these at a time, I am with the end of this show. I have for you guys. I have a proposal for you guys for my friends. I have a proposal after we do business. After we talk about how we're on We Talk Podcasts and how there's an Instagram for Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Everybody should follow. Which we won't mention the Instagram for Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Everybody should follow until the end of the show when we'll talk about that. But I have a proposal for you, my buddies, 8th Dan Stanadu and Swift Nick Boxer and Jukin and Jivin, Jim Cotta there and me. Gigolo Jack Hall has a proposal for you gentlemen when business is done.
As long as it's not
is this
jiggling.
One of those modest proposals where it turns out we've got to eat people?
No, that was last year, remember?
I just assume he was trying to disappear another whore.
he's going to pay you $1 million to sleep with your right
Anyone else want to start over?
No. There we go. It's your turn, Nick. It's your job now. Please tell us about the film.
Just checking one more time. Anyone else want to start over?
Why would we start over? This is gold, man. Gold. With a capital B.
Cast a Deadly Spell. I enjoyed it. It's a HBO film starring Fred Ward and a lot of character actors that you won't know the names of, but you go, oh, I love that guy in. Yeah, this is a neo-noir type film with magic for some reason. There's no reason for the magic other than that's the whole concept of this film. It's 1948 and they're using magic.
It's like saying a James Bond film has no reason to have spies.
Hey, same director as Casino Royale and GoldenEye, so makes sense.
Our hero, I believe his name was Philip Lovecraft. Get used to that. They're gonna throw a lot of names from magic in there for no apparent reason. I tried to suss out some sort of logic to it. There is none. Playing a private eye trying to solve the mystery, and he does. And there's a virgin killing unicorns in this.
Only virgins can kill unicorns. That was established.
Yeah. Yes,
They established.
I did not want to get into the minutia of this film. I just said it's the Brit version killing vampires. I didn't need it to the virgins to be necessary to kill virgins.
Grammatically.
Not vampires, and his name isn't Fred Ward. It's Fred Ward, and they're killing unicorns. Let's move on.
But grammatically, I want to be clear, it's a virgin who kills unicorns, not a virgin killing unicorn.
That is.
Oh, man.
Good point.
If there's a movie out there that has a virgin killing unicorn, next season, I don't give a shit what we're doing.
whatever topic. Whatever isn't topic.
That next we're doing that sports way. Movies. Oh, I got a virgin killing.
And I've got the sand.
Yeah, I knew that was coming.
Keep going. I'm sure everyone's on the edge of their seat wondering what else happens in Cast a Deadly Spell.
I forgot what we were doing.
No, this basically follows the plot of most noir films. Private Eye gets hired. He sort of gets suckered from by an innocent female, and also gets suckered by a femme fatale. He tries to figure out the big mystery of where's the book, the Necronomicon that the rich guy has hired him to find. Well, he finds it, and, you know, probably even better if he left everything alone because, you know, shit hits the fan. I think that's all we really need for this film.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you really want to know what it's about, just check out IMDb.
Explain nothing. What's weird is I also didn't know about this film, but I've seen the sequel.
Yeah.
Not knowing it was a sequel. There's a sequel called Witch Hunt with Dennis Hopper and Eric Bogosian, and I love Eric Bogosian, so I've seen the sequel not knowing that it was that there had been another film.
So if you guys recall, there was a book called The Video and Movie Guide. It came out from like 1986 to 2007. I think pretty much all of us had a copy.
Oh, yeah.
So I first heard about this probably 20 years ago in that. I read about it. It was 4 stars. Witch Hunt was 3.5 stars. I wanted to see it for years. I never forgot the title, never forgot the book, because it has Fred Ward and I'll watch anything with him, but it was hard to find. So when it became available, when I got a streaming service a few years ago, 3.5 years ago, where I saw it's available, I was like, that was the first thing I watched on the streaming service. So for me, it was the opposite. I always knew about it, but I hadn't seen it until 3.5 years ago. And now I've rewatched it, of course, because it's great.
It's great. Yeah, maybe we should go right to scoring. I think the love fest is already in full swing. We just go right on.
It's a totally different movie for us, to a certain degree. I mean, I guess every season we usually wind up doing, I mean, ideally doing something maybe that's actually a good movie. And then so the question is, like, where does the Boogaloo fit? And I do feel like there is Boogaloo elements to this, but it's oddly contained.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, in the case of Ninja, the dominant, violent, sorcerer, elemental, whatever, that one the Boogaloo spills out of, you know, it's like a cauldron of Boogaloo.
I'm now looking to see if there's a movie called Ninja, the Dominatrix.
Also going into next season.
I think this movie has very limited Boogaloo, but I think it has a ton of weirdness. So I think that's where this is where I'm having some difficulty within the context of this podcast, because I love this movie. Like I said, I heard about it years ago. I knew I would love it. I did love it. I still love it. But it's more a movie to me that I go, it's a weird film. But it's to me the film that probably closest for kind of look and feel and style and weirdness that people would know would be Beetlejuice. I think it has a very similar vibe. Mm-hmm. And is Beetlejuice a weird movie or is it a Boogaloo movie? It has maybe a few Boogaloo elements, but it's more of just a weird movie. And I think this qualifies more as just a weird movie than a really Boogaloo movie.
And it is a weird movie. There's lots of weird that happens in it, for sure.
I might be the only one that looked at the cast list and went, ooh, David Warner.
That is possible.
Like, yeah. Oh, Julianne Moore. Yeah, I always enjoy
Frank. I love Clancy Brown.
Clancy Brown. He's good. And then I saw David Warner. Like, all right, David Warner.
I think Fred Ward, obviously, I think should have been a bigger star. He's awesome in this. This movie's better than Witch Hunt, and it's largely because he's just better than Dennis Hopper is, who's just not as suited to be that. Yeah. I don't know. He's a world-weary detective. Well, and that was in the 50s. It's really not a sequel. It's more of a reimagining in a different era.
Mm. Yeah, Fred Ward just has that, like, lived-in look.
Yeah.
Where it's just kind of like, you can believe him absolutely as the private detective who's lived a little too much and seen a little too much in his time.
I can't believe this is the first we've seen Fred Ward.
Yeah.
On the shows, honestly, because that we haven't done Remo Williams so far is a crying shame.
No, I tried to figure out a way to fit it in a couple times. I love that. Yeah, he should have really been a much bigger star than he ever became. I mean, is Tremors his biggest movie, his most recognizable movie?
I'd say so, yeah.
And it's a movie that we could do on this podcast that would fit in, but it's, he's just great.
Tremors 8, I mean, it is definitely. Yeah.
I'd say once you hit Tremors 3, then you'd really be settled into the show, yeah.
Yeah. We could do it for any of them, but. I was going to suggest, I'll say it now, because I'm not going to suggest it forever, and it won't happen. I was going to suggest we find a movie with a movie series with exactly 8 movies.
I believe we've talked about that before.
And then all 4 of us choose a series with 8 movies on it.
That's how it works.
It'd be like Kiss and the solo album, so we have 4 seasons of 8.
We each have to do 8 episodes alone.
we thought doing the college sorority school, you know, comedy 80s sex com got old by 8. Can you imagine?
Wait until you've done Police Academy.
Yeah.
No. Okay, here's the idea for this, and I know this is way off topic, but
we're not doing it.
Worry about the topic too much.
But I just think if you did one movie from each, each season was 2 movies from each, and then you just did 4 seasons, you'd get through all 8, but it would be a little different each time.
I just thought of my pitch for next year. All right.
Wait till you hear my proposal.
Oh yes, your indecent proposal. Okay. Yeah, why don't we get to scoring? Let's...
not having a threesome, I'll be honest. Just put it out of your mind right away.
Well, now right,
I think we're going to run headlong into scoring here. In our search for the ultimate B movie, we rate each film in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category is called Schlock Appeal, and we start with Stan.
Now, when I discovered this movie, I watched it during... I just watched a few minutes of it. And it was in a period where I feel like the movie goes to kind of the Boogaloo zone. And so I didn't know what to expect. And so I was very excited based on that. And then when I watched the movie, it's like, A, it gives you context towards that. But also more to the point is that the rest of it is perfectly... I mean, it's weird, but it tells a... It tells a story. As Nick said, you know, this is a hard-boiled private detective story just with magic thrown into it. And so I think that I can't go too high because it's not crazy boogaloo all the time. But it's a solid movie with some elements, in my opinion. So I'm going to go with a 4.
Yeah, I think 4 is right. I could go like right up to a 6, but that title, Cast a Little Spell, it could be just a neo-noir. And they're referring to some femme fatale casting a spell over somebody.
That's or in this case, cast a deadly spell.
It doesn't matter. I think if the title had... of the movie had been the first line in the movie, which was, in 1948, everybody used magic. If that was the title, I would have known about this film, and I would have seen it, and proclaimed its goodness from miles around. But as it was, I was not aware. It doesn't have that schlock feel. So it's a 4.
Yeah, if it was weird appeal, I could give it 9. But it's schlock appeal, and the appeal is very high. It does have a little bit of schlock. But, largely in some of those special effects that are, you know, not the best, but in some ways they kind of embrace that. So, yeah, I got a 5.
I'll see your 5.
No raising on this one.
No, I'm good. More heart than budget. $6 million reported budget.
Yeah, $11 million in today's by inflation. In today's
era. Ooh, you're really bringing the math. All right. Yeah.
Fantastic. Like the thing is that this is an HBO movie. It is. It's chock full of character actors, like we mentioned. Everybody is doing a fine job. There's nothing that's, you know, seems, you know, over the top for me, or anybody that seems to be bringing it to an extra amount. So I'm going to go right down the middle, because it's a well-done movie by, you know, consistently good people. 5.
Before you do that, I will say one thing that may affect this. It did take 10 years of pitching and selling and trying to get this film made for it to be made. It was a decade to get it done.
I'll go with a 6 then. That's worth an extra point to me.
I have to say, more heart than budget, right? Hmm. The read up I have on this one compares it to Roger Rabbit, and I'd actually rate it right up beside Roger Rabbit. Somebody obviously cared about this film, and to do that on $6 million is kind of amazing. So I'll go as high as an 8 on this.
Yeah, I mean, I also got an 8 because it's a high budget, or not a high budget movie. It's still at $6 million. It's a lot higher than a lot of the films that we do, but it's certainly not a high budget by any means. It's about what. It's about the same as what HBO gave most of the movies in that era. But most of the movies in that era were not as high concept as this. So when you think about how high the concept of this is and what they needed to accomplish on that meager budget, I think it's pretty impressive. Like I say, the special effects aren't necessarily good, but in some ways they embrace that, and it makes it even better because it just works with the kind of the weirdness. So yeah, I got an 8.
I'm actually going to go all the way up to a 9 because this is, they had the money, they had the concept, they had all that stuff, but it's just a beautifully made movie. Like they really went hard to make this the set design and the costume design is pushed all the way when they could have put that money into special effects. They could have put it into, you know, more gags like the little gremlin characters. And instead they put it in, you know, lighting and set design. So 9 for me.
Now those little gremlin characters that you mentioned, Gremlins 2 was made 1 year earlier. Don't you think that somebody just showed up and grabbed a couple? Somebody just snuck out a couple
of his couple that came off the line and they just didn't look that great. Like, yeah. We'll take those. Yeah. They grabbed some from the dumpster after the,
I think that's, I think it sounds about right.
That makes sense. I believe it.
What the fuck moments.
All right. Well, now, again, for me, this will all come around, mostly around the same section. Like, there is a section where Fred Ward's Lovecraft character gets, I want to say cursed, something like that. And so he winds up in the kitchen of this bar, restaurant, whatever. And so there's a battle that goes on, and then there's a creature that grows out of the stew pot. And like we talked about this idea of not having the best special effects. And so there's this moment of like, wow, that special effect. Like, imagine that without seeing anything else. that's really where I came into this movie.
So are you talking about the part where it attacks him in the booth and you can see the wires as he flies in?
Well, then that's,
I don't know if you noticed that, but you can see the wires as it flies in.
Yeah, and well, and then there's the whole like in the kitchen, like just everything that's zinging around and happening and stuff like that. Like it just is really, really hilarious out of context. And then they go to the police station, and then right here, it's kind of bang, 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 where there's some moments, because they have a seance going on in the middle of the police station. They're interrogating a werewolf, which I thought was hilarious. And then we move down near the end of the movie, and there's some zombies that are building a house, which is, like, extremely weird, really funny moment that seems kind of out of place to me within the movie. He kicks a gargoyle in the nards, you know, and I thought, hey, this is great. This is like monster, you know, a good monster movie should have that. But the credits.
What about the gargoyles? What about the gargoyle's reaction to that?
Yeah, yes. In the credits, it's fantastic because there is actually a credited unicorn wrangler. which I think is fantastic. So, again, I'm going in an almost out of context way from the first time that I saw this, so I'm going to give it a 7. It's not, you know, in context, they're not quite so boogaloo, but out of context, they can be really boogaloo.
Sorry, I didn't get your number there.
7.
Not
and what category is this?
More heart than budget.
Let's see if he gives the same number.
We're doing objective quality.
Swag appeal. I thought that James over there was the one drinking the scotch. What's
Nick's off watching. He's watching Witch Hunt right now. That's why he got distracted.
It's still good. It's not as good, but it's still very good.
I was actually searching while Stan was doing his little review thing there. I was searching for it on streaming services because I do want to watch it.
It's on Crave in Canada, where you are. I believe.
I have now found it on an HBO like service.
So are you gonna score the movie?
Yes. What money they had, they
might as well.
No, it's not the money's one. We did that one.
I just want to know if he'd give it the same score that he gave it before.
I know if I had cut him off, he would have started in on them on what money they had. That was it's the next one. WTFs.
WTFs. This one does not rate high. I mean, we got the gargoyle, we got the soup monster. We have our hero acting extremely dumb sometimes. But for me, the WTF is the casual offensiveness of some of the things in here. At one point in this film, a fag party is mentioned. And the rest of this movie is like Roger Rabbit. It's almost a kid's film in some ways. And then they just throw out a fag party when I was actually thinking having a transgender character in this movie was actually kind of revolutionary for the time period. And then they just go this weird route. And then the big payoff of this whole thing, it has a married man who looks to be about 30, 32, making love to a 15-year-old or 16-year-old. And it is just sloughed off as guys will be guys. That is sort of the WTFs for me is this. Those two things could have been easily avoided, and yet they weren't. I don't know if it's the time. I think I would have found them offensive in, what was it, 1991?
91, yeah.
91. I think I would have found both those things offensive at that time. and their inclusion being completely unnecessary is definitely a WTF for me. So I'm gonna go with not high, because I mean this is just a slip in judgment. 5.
Yeah, it's you know, I mean, it's 2019. I mean, sure, 3.5 years ago, those things didn't offend me. But now, now when I watch it, I definitely notice it. No, it's true. It's a you know, having that's a good character.
In the meantime, you've become woke.
Yeah, exactly. It's three. That's 3.5 years ago. It's like a lifetime ago. Seriously, the character being, the character is a cross-dresser. He's cross-dresser for no reason. He's not exactly treated with any respect. Now, I think it's, I couldn't tell if that was a 1991 thing or a 1948 thing, if it was trying to be of that era. And that's why it was okay to refer to him as a fairy and such, or not, or if it was just because, you know, but it's totally, and you'll come across this on, all the time on things, that you can't believe that was that not that long ago that these things were okay. And also, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fact is a 30 something year old bangs a 16 year old, and that's what saves the world by accident. Like, you know, not to give away the plot, cause you see that coming from a mile away. Those are the biggest things that to me are WTF. So it's not high on that. So I'm only giving it a 4.
I think we passed right over the gremlins. And the gremlins have a nice pairing where it's this guy that runs a cheap motel where one of the characters has been staying. And we get the gremlins came back from Japan after the war. So there's a bit of casual racism mixed in with the gremlins.
Yeah, that's true. Plus the gremlins moon somebody. Moon
they do. Yes. They do.
And just him with the shotgun. Trying to shoot the gremlin play.
I think you Stan mentioned the zombies building the house, which I thought was funny. I don't like that zombies were taking jobs away from Americans who needed those jobs in the late 1940s.
And they mentioned that they came from like Jamaica or something, so build a wall, clearly.
That's right. And they're just zombies. They're not going to get over that. They're not going to figure out how to tunnel. Like it'll be fine. That'll actually work. That's a solid plan. I think one of the weirdest parts is like he has to do the magic spell. It's going to end the world. In Evil Dead, it's like 8 words long, and this takes about an hour and a half of screen time to read off his magic spell. They really have a lot of time to work on their solution to the problem. That said, I'm still only going up to a 5. Memorable moments.
Well, this one has, I mean, honestly, I'm never going to forget this movie. There's no question about it. It's got some really nice stuff in it. Like, there's a point where one of the characters is killed by the paper. It's supposed to be money, and it pops out, and it's all this newspaper, and he's just killed by paper cuts. And at the end, like, it's just really well done, really interesting. There's also a point where it starts to rain and you realize that it's raining blood. And I love the fact that it looks really nice and it's not like called out per se in like too much. And it's just like, yeah, this happens here. It rains blood. So perfectly normal. And there's an awesome line in there right near the end where the line is wrong planets in the right place at the wrong time. And I just thought, that's a really good line. So overall, and you know, when I add that up with the stuff like from that moment where I first saw it, I think that there's quite a bit that I'm going to remember from this. So I'm going to go with a 7 here as well.
For memorable moments, this one's going to rate pretty high for me because, well, I love noir. I don't particularly like neo-noir. I think a lot of the time when they gain the lighting and the technology to do noir in color, it kind of falls flat. But this successfully gets that feel down. And then you add like a completely crazy concept, like adding magic to it. This one's going to make my regular playlist like a yearly, every year or something like this. I love this film. So I'm going to go right up to an 8.
What category is this?
Memorable moments.
Okay, so this movie has 3.5 years ago since I saw it. Gail Hanhurst produces it. Joseph Dowery, who did Pretty Little Liars, wrote it. Say Martin Campbell, who did like GoldenEye and Casino Royale, directed it. You got these excellent actors, Julianne Moore, Clancy Brown, Fred Ward, like all these great people. And it's just, I remember it really well. The scene, you guys talked about it as WTF, but to me it was not WTF. It's a memorable moment. The scene, because we've got to explain that these zombies, these aren't Walking Dead zombies. These are voodoo zombies. So they're more like they're hypnotized, but they don't have any brains left, you know? And so they're building this house. And like, I remember that whole scene. In fact, that's twice I've watched this scene. And I don't know if the dialogue that from Lovecraft interviewing the lady is important to the story, because I'm so busy watching the stuff in the background and laughing so hard, watching them fall, them walk up this ladder and just fall off because they don't have the motor skills and everything. That to me is a totally memorable moment. As I remember that ending, I remembered it very well, and the creature at the ending. And then there's just the great lines. There's a couple about his tie. Olivia, who's the virgin that we were talking about, she says, "That's quite a tie." He says, "Oh, thanks, Lovecraft." And she says, "Put up much of a fight." And he goes, "No, I snuck up behind it."
It's a great, later on, so great.
That's a really good line.
Later on, Lovecraft goes, "What's wrong with my tie?" To Connie, and she goes, "Nothing if you like Vertigo." So those were a couple of great ones. I like it when the guy who he gets the book to, who's incanting the spell to bring out the creature, says, "Do you long realize how long they've waited for me? Centuries, millennia." Lovecraft goes, "How long is that in dog years?" But my favorite one of all of them, Clancy Brown character is a kind of a crooked club owner who used to be the partner detective with Lovecraft. And he goes and talks to him. And later on, Connie, who has had relations with both of them and blah, 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 and not to give out too much, but the one played by Julianne Moore, she says to him, "Did he say anything interesting?" And he goes, "I've heard more interesting sounds coming out of a pair of corduroy pants." Best line all time, all my life. So 8 is good.
8, was that the answer there?
Yeah.
All right.
8 is enough.
Fantastic. This one's gonna hang around. It has some great bits. My favorite one of those banter lines was, "I'm serious. If you're that serious, why are you wearing that hat?"
Yeah, that was another great one.
I dug it. Yeah, it's and you know, David Warner. David Warner's
He is.
So 8 for me as well. I think this one's gonna hang around in my head, and I will be. I'll do a nice double feature with Witch Hunt,
which is what I did.
Nice, a crazy concept.
Well, I mean, there's, you know, a private detective story. There's nothing crazy about that. Adding magic in this case certainly bumps that up quite a bit. Adding the weirdness factor in and around the story, that absolutely bumps it up even more. And then, you know, as you told me earlier, knowing that it took 10 years to actually pitch this and get it made, I gotta go even higher. I'm going with an 8 on this.
Nick, it's time for Schlock Appeal.
Yeah, I know. I'm just pausing for some sort of dramatic.
That does make good podcast.
Yes.
Nick, are you?
Yeah, I know it's not Schlock Appeal. What is it?
It's a crazy concept. I'm gonna say, if you would come to rehearsal.
I thought last episode was supposed to be the train wreck.
I shouldn't have had 4 beers tonight. Yes.
Leveled you right out.
I got the giggles.
Oh boy,
crazy concept. This was a little bit out there for, you know, a legitimately produced HBO film. I mean, quality over quantity is their motto, I believe, and pitching a neo-noir film with cheesy effects and magic doesn't really scream that, if you know what I mean. But it works. I think at least 2 years of that trying to get it made was just talking back and forth with HBO, just going, no, it'll work. Trust me, it'll work. And people just not believing them until somebody finally did. I think it's up there. It's not way up there, but it's up there. I'll give it a 7.
Yeah, I don't see it as all that crazy, to be honest with you. I think that's kind of like that's pretty common. You take something that's like an established genre and you go, oh, what can I do to put a twist on it? In this case, you decide magic. Like, it's kind of that's kind of, you know, fairly simple. So I as much as I like the movie, I don't think the concept is all that crazy. The execution, like I say, is more crazy, like for the weirdness. But the concept itself, especially, like I say, in that era where you're saying it's, you know, like I say, it's shortly after Beetlejuice has come out. And like I say, that's the film that to me has the same vibe the most. So I don't think it's in that context. I just don't think it has much. Now, I will say this, because earlier Nick was talking about how this film, he was comparing it to Roger Rabbit. And it is an R-rated film. It's less R-rated than Witch Hunt would be, but it is an R-rated film. But there is times that you can actually see that they've overdubbed the dialogue from more profanity to less profanity. To me, that's a crazy concept when it's already an R-rated film. So and it's quite violent, like the blood and whatever, and the horror moments to that degree. I mean, not horror is probably not right, but yes, fairly. It's got some pretty graphic violence. So that to me is pretty strange. So that will bump it up to me to a 5.
Bumped up to a 5. Oof. I think I'll come in at a 7. I think I don't think noir was like, you know, the superhero genre of 1991. That it was noir would have been a hard enough sell, and then it's noir with a twist. You're not reinventing a genre that's hot, that's for sure. So 7 for me.
Yeah, but if you sit there and you go, hey, Roger Rabbit came out 2 years ago and it was it was a noir, and all they did was they took it and put a twist on it, put it cartoons, let's take it and do a noir and put a twist on it, this time it's magic. I think that's pretty much the pitch.
I'd give Roger Rabbit a 9.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, well, they were trying to make it for 10 years, and Roger Rabbit did come out in 1981 as a novel first. I thought this was based on a novel. It is not.
All right. So our 6th category is based on a novel. Zero's crossed. Each season we have 6 secret modifiers. This film does get 2 of them. It does get a -1 for having just barely tipped over that time limit, and it is 96 minutes. It does get a +1 because I gave the gremlins, the magical gremlins, a +1 there.
And don't forget unicorns.
And
isn't there a minus for having supernatural creatures presenting them as magic? And shouldn't the based on that the gremlins be a minus?
I'll go with whatever the room says.
I would still argue unicorns.
Does it get both then?
So I mean,
it has vampires and werewolves in the police station and stuff. So, I would give it both, actually. Yeah, I would give it a plus and a minus.
It's not predicated on those, but no.
You know, the werewolf's a pretty big plot point, though. That is a key plot point, and
still
and
wondering
very clearly guilty. a supernatural element. All right. So it gets 3 modifiers. It gets the time modifier. It loses a point because of werewolves. It gains a point because of unicorns. And also virgins in LA, which are also
magical creatures.
They do mention how hard that is to find.
That is right. All right, which gives us a final score of 63 out of 100, putting it between Dracula versus Frankenstein and Game of Death 2.
Sorry, what was it again?
63.
63. Okay, cool.
63. Pretty respectable.
Kind of, yeah, I mean, it's the weirdness helps it. It probably suffers too much for being, as we've seen before, too good a movie.
The interesting thing, though, is that this one actually wound up scoring in the good zones. Like for when you talk about a good movie, it can still score high in More Heart Than Budget. It can still score high in memorable moments and occasionally crazy concept. And so a lot of the good movies that we've done don't actually score in that. This one manages to pull its points from those.
It's weirder than a movie. That's the thing, is Trick Baby was also a really good movie, but this is weirder.
Yes.
Yeah. This makes me wonder what another HBO film from 1991, Highway to Hell, would rate.
Well, soon we'll be pitching next season. So it's one of the closest points ranges I have noticed as well. 30. So numbers out of 50, we gave it 30, 32, 32, and 34. That is one of the narrowest margins.
Wow, that's really interesting.
There's usually an outlier, but that's really close together. All right. Cast a deadly spell.
Yeah.
Wrap it up.
All right.
Close it up.
Well, we got to do some business, of course, but
and then Jack's got his surprise.
Jack's got his proposal. Okay.
It's cake.
Well, let's just say, so next episode I think we'll bring some more Boogaloo, because we're talking about Beastmaster 2 Through the Portal of Time. And that one, the title alone sounds pretty Boogaloo to me. So I'm looking forward to that. Do some business.
All right. We can be found on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. And for everything else, our podcast sponsors, We Talk Podcasts, have a .com site where you can find the Octagon, which is our ranking of our search for the ultimate B-movie, movie by movie and category by category. And they have a Facebook and they have a Twitter, and you should subscribe to our podcast on whatever podcast app is your jam.
All right. Well,
First off, I just want to mention Highway to Hell, Nick, is actually not an HBO film. I didn't think it was. I did double check it here. It's a really good film. I also really like it, and I would love to get it on the show. But that actually is not an HBO film, though it does have that similar vibe.
I thought it for sure was, but okay, I'll believe you on that.
But any movie that has Lita Ford and Gilbert Godfrey and Ben Stiller and Jerry Stiller from 1991.
That's a great film.
It's a fantastic movie. So as I said, we normally record two of these at a time. Nick, are you spaced out yet?
No.
Okay, come here. All right. We normally record two of these at a time, which means that our next episode, we would normally be at the end of episode 4, pitching our next season. I'm proposing we maybe mix it up and do this, I'm hoping, maybe once a year in the final season of each year, something like that, just try and do something different. Where you guys each take, we all have, I'm sure you guys have, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, you have many different topics that you'd love to do for seasons?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sure. Sounds true. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm suggesting that next episode, or that end of episode 4, instead of pitching a movie, say which two seasons you want to do. And then in episode 8, pick two movies from each of the seasons that you want to do. We throw those 8 in the octagon in a season I would call Enter the Octagon 1. Have those 8 movies compete of different season pitches. 8 different season pitches, and the movie that scores the highest is the film we do, or is the season we do the following year.
Wow. You know,
this sounds like snake format the podcast.
It's not that difficult.
This is one of those cases where, as you're so happily so happy to mention that we record two of these at once, that perhaps you should have pitched this before we started, so that we actually all really picked up on it.
One more time. Next season, say I want to do a movie on aliens invading Earth, and I want to do possessed cars, okay? So I'm saying those are my two picks. In season 8, I pick one movie from possessed cars and one movie from Alien Invasion. Everybody picks one from the two. We have 8 different movies then of different seasons that representing the movie that scores the highest that season. We would do that season's. So if Alien Invasion was the movie that scored the highest, the following season we would do Alien Invasion. It's not that difficult.
That made less sense than the first time.
Holy shit, it's not that difficult. Well, Jim, you try and tell me what I'm saying.
No, I have no idea what you're saying. I thought I understood, and then the second time you explained it, it made less sense.
Just to tell you guys how fucked up this idea is, I got what's going on. I understand what he's saying.
Shit just got real.
Would you like me to explain it to you?
Please, can you try and do that?
Oh, all right. Next season will be us picking fantasy films. Okay. Sorry, fantasy was the wrong word to use there. Us picking films from our prospective seasons that we have lined up but haven't guaranteed. Then we do an entire season of those. And then whatever scores the highest, I think he's saying, will be the next season. Whatever grouping that film came
now
from.
Now I don't know what it is anymore.
Well,
we'd have 8. We would have 8 films in a sort of playoff.
Yes,
exactly.
8 films.
We'd have a hodgepodge. Each
film represents a prospective season, and the film that scores highest out of those 8, we do that season that it represents the next year.
I like it. Let's do that.
Cool. Shit.
Did right. you just say that you like it, let's do that, so that you'd get him to shut up?
No. Oh. No.
It's a neat concept. I think of doing it, enter the octagon once a year. 8 films enter the octagon, 8 films enter, 1 film exits, and that's, and we do a season based on that film that wins.
I love it. We're doing that. I'm for it. You, Stan and Nick...
Well, obviously, at worst, we could wind up with a tie if Nick and I didn't like it. I'm perfectly fine to do it. So,
all right.
I will follow the consensus.
Excellent. Right. That's going to be fun. So next time, bring 2 movies, and you'll say the seasons, but you won't reveal the films till episode 8. You'll see the prospective seasons. Awesome, guys. And with that, if there's anybody left, thanks.
So, and how much are you paying to sleep with anybody's wife?
Also, anybody whose film wins, I get to fuck.
All right.
Okay, so obviously we're all choosing the worst movies ever.
Roger Corman it is.
It's like, so my Boogaloo classic is Citizen Kane, and
you need to exhume the corpse of Orson Welles. I got some business.
Oh god. And we didn't think that we could get better than the first episode. Oh, boy. Okay. So season 10, Do You Believe in Magic? Carries on. Next episode with Beastmaster 2 through the Portal of Time. And hopefully we've worked out some of the kinks by that point.
Hopefully it will teach us enough time travel that we can go back. Yeah. Avoid some of this.
You'd think that by season 10 we'd actually be good at this. Turns out we're regressing, so that's good to know.
Why would season 10 be different?
Oh, shit. Okay.
God bless you, everyone who made it to this far in the episode. Just pat on the back. Give yourself a pat on the back.
Okay, let's wrap this up. For Nick, and for Jack, and for Jim, I am your host, 8th Dan Stan Adu, and thank you for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!
From the producer of Aliens and Terminator 2, L.A. in 1948.
How is it?
Bad.
It's always bad.
Something's coming, something ugly.
Everyone wanted power.
I want it in my hands by Thursday. I'm attending a conference, and this volume is the key to my presentation.
A conference that starts at midnight?
Everyone wanted control.
It's in the book, all right here. The promise, power, and the price.
What price?
You're going to be dead, Lovecraft.
And I'm going to be on top of the world.
That should settle things once and for all about who was smart and who was a chump.
And everyone used magic. Black magic.
The Necronomicon. Must be some book.
Except Detective Lovecraft.
Damn it, Phil, everybody's got a compromise.
That's what I keep hearing.
Then what makes you so special?
He's the right guy.
I'm serious.
Then why are you wearing that hat?
But it's the wrong time.
Someone's throwing lesser demons at you. You don't even carry a rabbit's foot.
I can handle it.
Well, I'm not worried about you, Phil. I'm worried about the people who might get in the way.
He's got 48 hours to save the world. Or what's left of it.
Phil, nothing in life's as funny as you think.
Fred Ward.
My collar may be a little frayed. Maybe I need a shoe shine. Nobody's got a mortgage on my soul. I own it, free and clear.
Cast a deadly spell.
The critics are mesmerized about Cast a Deadly Spell. Imagine Who Framed Roger Rabbit with witches and zombies instead of tunes, and you've got a great way to spend an evening. Cast a Deadly Spell is sheer entertainment and is the newest addition to HBO Video's Crowd Pleasers program, the program that stands behind new rentals with strong retailer awareness and a customer satisfaction guarantee. 20,000 retailers will receive exciting POP, including rolled posters and a full-length screening copy. Consumers receive a maximum rebate of $2 directly from HBO Video if they are not thoroughly entertained by this wildly successful HBO original movie. Spell works magic, and it's gonna work its magic on you. Only from HBO Video.